Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 1st of November. This hour of the program, when should you get a test for prostate cancer, a screening for a mammogram? How often should you have a pap smear? The information has been conflicting over the last couple of years, and today we will talk about why there have been so many different recommendations. Our guest this hour has a piece, actually, that he's written extensively about this, but he has a piece today in CNN.com titled "Prostate Cancer Screening May Do More Harm Than Good," in which he says, "I am convinced that most advocates of screening and aggressive treatment are motivated by a genuine desire to benefit men. Unfortunately, they are uninformed or unwilling to believe that the reality is that early detection and aggressive treatment of cancer is not always the best thing." Our guest is Dr. Otis Webb Brawley. He is the Chief Medical Officer and Executive Vice President of the American Cancer Society, responsible for promoting the goals of cancer prevention, early detection, and quality treatment through cancer research and education. He champions efforts to decrease smoking, improve diet, detect cancer at the earliest stage, and provide the critical support that cancer patients need. He serves as professor of hematology, oncology, medicine, and epidemiology at Emory University. He co-chaired the U.S. Surgeon General's Task Force on Cancer Health Disparities and filled a variety of capacities at the National Cancer Institute, most recently serving as assistant director. And he is the author of the forthcoming book, How We Do Harm. I would imagine we'll have a lot of phone calls on all of these issues this hour, and you are ever so welcome to join us. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. You can also send an email if you would like to do that. That is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Dr. Brawley, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I think we're all very confused because the recommendations have been so different over the last couple of years. Let's concentrate on the prostate screening recommendations. And you write today the recent news that a group of highly respected medical experts, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, is considering advising against routine prostate cancer screening. And you say it shouldn't come as much of a surprise to anybody. Why not?
Well, the fact is that going back 15 years, some organizations have expressed concern about prostate cancer screening. And literally since the year 2008, all major organizations that issue any kind of statement have said there is a concern about screening. It seems that doctors and the population are not listening to those recommendations.
And how long, tell me about the history we've had for prostate screening and for other kinds of screenings. It's been, I think, a fairly common practice for people to get screenings at a certain age.
Well, the first screening that came along really was the pap smear, which was developed in the 1940s, became more and more popular in the 1950s and 60s for cervical cancer. Breast cancer screening with mammography, widespread screening started really in the 1970s after some studies that really began in the late 50s showed that screening saved lives. Prostate screening, and by the way, we should mention colon cancer screening, for which there's almost no debate. It is effective, be it stool blood testing or colonoscopy. And ironically, a large number of Americans over 50 don't get colon cancer screening. Prostate screening started in the United States really in 1991 with some publications and some journals that showed that it found cancer. The studies to figure out if it actually saved lives started about 3 to 4 years after widespread prostate cancer screening started. And what has now happened is those studies have matured, and most of those studies show that screening does some harm, and most of those studies do not show screening does some benefit. One study shows that there is some small benefit from prostate screening.
What's the harm?
The harm is there are a large number of men who have prostate cancer that was never meant to bother them, but now we can find it, and we can cure a person who does not need to be cured with treatments that cause incontinence, urinary and sometimes fecal incontinence. They cause impotence. We sometimes give drugs that cause muscle weakening, cause osteoporosis, cause diabetes and heart disease. And the big issue here is we need a test to figure out the cancers that need to be cured and the cancers that need to be watched.
And we don't have that kind of test now?
We do not have a good test right now. We have good population studies to literally show that over the last 20 years, we have cured at least 1.4 million men needlessly. We all hope that we have cured some men who needed to be cured, but the science to show that is actually quite weak.
Mm-hmm. And why is it that it's hard to find a test that will distinguish between aggressive and lethal and that which is not?
Well, you need to actually follow men over a long period of time after you've diagnosed them with prostate cancer. And unfortunately, the science of prostate cancer is riddled with people jumping a little bit ahead of the science. Many people in 20 years ago didn't believe that there was any question. They just thought you find the cancer and you cure it. They just couldn't accept the fact that there was some cancers that don't need to be cured. So we're late in actually doing the science to actually figure that out. Interestingly, in breast cancer, we actually have some studies and some tests, they're genomic tests, that actually help us predict the biologic behavior of breast cancer. But nothing like that exists right now in prostate cancer, partially because men and their doctors and the medical community were so interested in screening and treatment, they forgot to do the science.
Mm. Dr. Brawley, you mentioned colon cancer testing, which is effective. Why is that effective?
Well, colon cancer is a very different disease, and interestingly, the studies have been well done in colon cancer. Indeed, we've had a study for more than 20 years showing that colon cancer screening with stool blood testing, which costs $10 a year to do, actually decreases risk of death by 35%. And for the last 10 years, we've shown that stool blood testing actually decreases risk of actually getting cancer by finding polyps before they develop into the kind of cancer that kills. Now, I mentioned stool blood testing. The best studies have been done in stool blood testing, but we accept that sigmoidoscopy and colonoscopy also save lives. But it's a very important point. 85% of men over the age of 50 have been screened for colon cancer, but only half of men over 50 have ever been screened for, 85% of men over 50 have been screened for prostate cancer, but only half have been screened for colon cancer. There is no debate. Colon cancer screening decreases risk of death by at least 30%, probably 35 or 40%.
How do you explain that disparity?
There's been a lot of press about prostate cancer. Prostate cancer has been compared to breast cancer, where we actually have studies to show that breast cancer screening saves lives. There may be also an aspect of unpleasantness in talking about colon cancer. After all, I've used the word stool blood testing.
Right. Yeah, I can understand. And people are worried about taking the test. What about people in all of these groups, be it prostate cancer, breast cancer, who are at high risk for developing the disease?
Well, the answer in prostate cancer that we should be telling men is we do not know if screening saves lives. There's some evidence to suggest that it does. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that it causes a lot of harm. But we don't know. And I personally believe men ought to be told that and ought to be allowed to make their own decision about whether or not to be screened. Unfortunately, frequently people say screening is always good and they push it. Some people do that because there's quite a bit of money to be made in screening, and some people do it because they just want to do something good. The answer in prostate cancer, especially for high-risk men, is we don't know. A man whose experience, personal experience with family members and friends with prostate cancer has been bad, I think can legitimately choose to be screened, realizing that we don't know if it saves lives. A man who is less concerned, I think, might legitimately choose not to be screened.
Mm-hmm. What about for women in mammography?
In mammography, we have 8 clinical studies that show that for women over the age of 50, mammography clearly saves lives and saves lives in large numbers. For women age 40 to 50, we have studies that suggest that screening saves lives. Most of us agree on the numbers, be it the Preventive Services Task Force, which has said, really, if a woman in her 40s doesn't want to be screened, that's understandable. If she wants to be screened, she should get screened. We at the ACS think that all women in their 40s should be screened. But it requires about 2,000 women to be screened over 10 years to save one life among women in their 40s. And that's a large number of screenings being done. It's actually a huge number of women who are going to be told, you have an abnormal mammogram, you need to come back and get a series of tests, and then those women will, for the most part, ultimately be told, you didn't have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually some studies to suggest that the inconvenience and the high number of women being called back in their 40s actually chases women away from mammography in their 50s and 60s when it is a much better test.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying under all of this that what we really need is a whole better series of tests?
We need a better series of tests. We also need a better understanding of what cancer is. Part of the problem is our definitions of cancer go back to the 1840s to some German pathologists using a light microscope. In 2011, with all of our new imaging technologies and other things, when someone sticks a needle into a breast or a needle into a prostate and then looks at that under a microscope, the pathologist is not saying this is cancer. The pathologist is saying this is what the German pathologist called cancer in the 1840s. Now, the German pathologists were using autopsied specimens from people who died. Today, with all of our imaging studies, and we find these things so small, it's what looks like cancer, but is it genomically programmed to grow, metastasize, spread, and kill? That's a question that we don't have an answer for, especially in prostate cancer. And that's really where science needs to go, to figure out how we can say, Mr. Jones, you have prostate cancer, but it was never going to bother you, or Mr. Smith, you have a problem, and we need to treat you.
It's sort of unbelievable, isn't it, Dr. Brawley, that we're still functioning with a definition from the 1840s?
That's exactly. It is very unbelievable to me, but it is unfortunately true. And unfortunately, many doctors do not understand that, and that's the root of some of this problem with screening.
There are people who will say it costs a lot of money to do these screenings, and underneath it all, money is the object. We want to save money here.
Yeah, healthcare is incredibly expensive. I look at the fact that there's a large number of people who don't get adequate health care, and then there's a certain medical gluttony. There are people who get way too much, sometimes health care that actually harms them. We do have to look at money, but this is actually looking at practicality. By the way, we haven't talked about lung cancer screening. One of the best studies ever done in screening looked at spiral CT screening. It was run by the National Cancer Institute, and it looked at smokers, heavy smokers in their 50s and 60s, 26,000 of them screened three times, and it truly showed the double-edged sword of screening. It showed that if you screen these 26,000 people, you avert 88 lung cancer deaths, but the interventions caused by abnormal findings on the CT scanning actually caused premature death in 16 people. Six of those 16, by the way, did not have lung cancer. So screening can be helpful in that it saves lives, but it also is almost always harmful. And you really need to appreciate that double-edged sword and appreciate the risk ratio when making a decision about screening.
Dr. Otis Brawley is our guest this hour. He is the chief medical officer at the American Cancer Society, and we're looking at all of the information that's been coming forward from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, which publishes and evaluates screening guidelines. They are now saying that we should ditch the PSA test. Some that it's just not very effective at all and may cause more harm than good, as our guest has said. And also there have been calls for women to have pap tests for cervical cancer every 3 years instead of every year. Women in their 40s don't appear to benefit from mammograms, and women ages 50 to 74 consider having them every 2 years instead of every year. Questions on all of this? No doubt you have a few. Our phone number for you to join the conversation and lines are open right now, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program today, Lori Winters, will be with us, director of exhibitions at the Milwaukee Art Museum. They have yet another wonderful exhibit, Impressionism, Masterworks on Paper. It's going to run through January 8, and it's a collection of 125 drawings, also watercolors and pastels by some of the greatest artists in the history of Western art. Lori will be with us. She really knows these drawings and is a wonderful guest. So that's coming up, our number two of our program. Let's go to phone calls for Dr. Otis Brawley. Here is the number again, 800-486-8655. Hillary is our first caller. Hi, Hillary.
Hi. I was just wondering what is causing the deaths, the six people that end up not having cancer based on their screening coming back negative?
Yeah, this was a spiral CT study where people got a spiral CAT scan every year, three of them actually. What happens is the radiologist looks at the film and says there is an abnormality in this man's chest. This abnormality could be cancer, but it also could be old burned-out tuberculosis. It could be an old fungal infection that this person has had for 60 of their 63 years. The only way to figure out what it is either to stick a needle into the chest to biopsy it and see if it's cancer, or to stick a tube down their throat into their lungs. This is called a bronchoscopy, and biopsy through the bronchoscope. And what happens is whenever you do a surgical procedure in people, there is a risk that an artery is going to be punctured and the person might bleed, a lung might be collapsed, or just a person, because we're talking about people in their 60s and 70s, a person might have a heart attack or a reaction to the anesthesia. And all of those accounted for those 16 premature deaths.
Thank you.
Thanks, Hillary. Lori is next from Menominee Falls. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for putting me on the air. I'm calling because my husband and I are going in an hour for him to have a biopsy on his prostate. The only indication for this was an elevated PSA count, which is at 5, a little bit over 5. And he has no other symptoms at all. And I'm wondering, given your program today, what we should be asking the physician as we go in today, or even if it is advisable to do what he is scheduled to do.
Yeah. Well, I can't give medical advice over the phone, especially not without having seen your husband. But I will tell you that I advise people to go see two or three doctors to talk about various things. I can tell you in general with a PSA over 5, if your husband is between the ages of 50 and 70, about 25% of those men are going to have prostate cancer. 75% will not. There's a small harm or risk of infection in getting the biopsy. He's actually going to get 10 or 12 needles stuck into his prostate today through his rectum. There's a small risk of infection, and about 1 out of every 1,000 men who get a biopsy are actually hospitalized for that infection. If he does have prostate cancer, they will give what's called a Gleason score, and then they will also talk about how big the tumor is in the biopsy specimen. And sometimes you can look at that and say this is almost certainly a cancer that would have never bothered him, especially if he's got a history of other health problems. Sometimes you can look at it and say this is clearly a very bad cancer, but more commonly you're in the middle where you don't know if this is an important cancer yet, or perhaps it's an unimportant cancer. In the United States, we tend to treat everybody. In Europe, they actually tend to watch those men, and that's part of the problem. So I wish your husband luck. I know exactly what you and he are going through. I just encourage you to try to talk to your physicians and also to get at least a second opinion, perhaps a third opinion.
How very helpful. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. You also may want to just, if you have access to a computer, go to CNN.com and download Doctor's column today, actually, and ask the doctor you're seeing, what do you think of this column? I'm a little confused here. How are you to know, particularly when it comes to prostate cancer, how are you going to know if you have it?
Interesting. Most men who are diagnosed and cured, many of them cured needlessly, have no symptoms. They are diagnosed because they get that blood test, and the blood test shows a number over usually 4, although some people now want to lower the range of upper limit of normal to 2.5. You ask an important question, because men who are having difficulty urinating, those men are frequently going to have something called benign prostatic hyperplasia, which, as the name implies, is benign. But getting the PSA and getting a prostate exam and workup of difficulty urinating is actually within the FDA-approved usage of PSA and is something that almost all of us would call good medicine. Interestingly, doing the PSA on a man who is over 50 and has no health problems has never been FDA approved, although it's the most common use of PSA in the United States.
We go to George in Monroe. Hi, George.
Hi. I'll tell a story that may be of interest to the woman who just called. I had a PSA of 5.5 last fall and went in for the biopsy. I had one positive out of the 12 samples in the biopsy. The one sample was grade 7 Gleason, which is the very aggressive score. And then I had my options very thoroughly explained to me by a urologist. And I had surgery with all of the usual sort of byproducts of surgery that have gotten so much publicity. But, you know, would I rather have those byproducts and have a grade 7 tumor growing in me? You bet your butt I would. And I think all of this discussion is completely misplaced. The cost of a PSA exam when you're getting a cholesterol and other blood tests anyway, I don't know what it is, but I can't imagine that that's a reason not to do it. If the complication, and that tells you whether you need a biopsy. And if the complication and infection rates on biopsy is 1 in 1,000, that tells you that the biopsy is not such a bad thing to do.
Dr. Brawley.
Yeah, well, population scientists would tell you that most of the men, at least 40%, some would actually estimate 60% of the men who have Gleason 3+4 tumors, which is one, you said 7, I don't know if it was a 4+3 or 3+4. 3+4 is not as aggressive as 4+3, but at least half of men who have Gleason 7 tumors fall into that category of they never needed to be cured. Unfortunately, if I have a man in front of me with a Gleason 3+4 or 4+3 in front of me, I don't know if he needs to be cured or not. I'd much rather the man go into the treatment realizing that what we know, what we don't know, and when appropriate, what we believe, than a man just totally being duped and that you have cancer, you must be treated.
When George outlined his case, did you think that it was the right way to go, Dr. Brawley?
Well, the right way to go is the way that the patient is most comfortable with. And in his case, it sounds like it was the right way to go. I have also, just this week, counseled someone who had something very similar to what he had, and now has an ostomy because of some complications during the surgery. So their stool comes out into a bag on their stomach wall, and this person is also having urinary incontinence and now has to wear diapers. That person regrets their decision, whereas it sounds like this gentleman is happy with his.
Mm-hmm. An email from Gretchen in Oshkosh. My father died of liver, lung, and lymph cancer. My brother died after suffering from brain, bone, and lung cancer. My sister died from T-cell lymphoma. What screening should I be doing? Their cancers were so random and unrelated, and I am 50.
Yeah. She may want to talk to a genetic counselor. There are certain genetic conditions, Li-Fraumeni syndrome, for example, that it's a mutation in a DNA repair gene. That syndrome actually causes a number of different cancers. It may be the reason why her family has this history. It may not. But talking to a genetic counselor to help figure that out is, I think, important. We at the American Cancer Society believe that all women over 40, should get mammography. They should also be told about the bad sides of mammography or its limitations. We believe that all men over 50 should be given the option of getting a PSA test, being told about all the risks and all the uncertainties, and then be told, make a choice that is right for you. We believe all people over 50 ought to be getting some type of colon cancer screening, and we believe that Pap smears should be given to women every 3 years if they've had a history of normal Pap smears, starting at about 18 or within 3 years of starting sexual activity.
Thanks, George, very much for your call. Mary in Madison. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I think that what people need to keep in mind, though, is that when they're trying to decide how often to be tested, they need to talk to their doctor about family history. What's right for one person is not right for another, necessarily. If I had not insisted on my doctor having a baseline mammogram done when I was in my 30s, they may not have caught the spots that I have now. So luckily, so far, mine are not progressing, and they believe them to be non-cancerous. But you have to take into account family history when you're talking to your doctor.
Yeah. Now, I will tell you that none of the professional organizations that make recommendations, of which there are about a half a dozen, currently recommends a baseline mammogram for women in their 30s. There is the appropriate use of mammography in certain limited women in their 30s who have a family history. There's also the appropriate use of MRI. One of the things that we worry about when starting mammography very, very early is on a population basis, if you do mammography on an annual basis to a large number of people, the more mammograms they get, the more likely you are to actually cause a cancer. Now, with mammography, we probably cause one cancer for every 30,000 mammograms that we do. But a woman who is, say, 20, who started annual mammography, could actually get into trouble from it by the time she's 70, or is more likely to get in trouble by the time she's 70. Not to mention the fact, mammography is not a very good test on the younger breast. As a woman's breast ages, it becomes easier to see the cancer with a mammogram. That's why it's a much better test for a 65-year-old than it is for a 45-year-old, and it's actually a better test for a 45-year-old than it is for a 35-year-old.
Thanks, Mary, very much for the call. Cindy in Minocqua, hi.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I had my yearly mammogram on October 14th of this year. I got a call back saying that they saw something that they wanted to recheck. So I went in yesterday. They did another mammogram and an ultrasound. It took a really long time with the ultrasound. The screener said that my breast tissue was very dense and she was having a lot of difficulty. Ultimately, they said they definitely see a change since my last one, and they want me to come in 6 months and redo another mammogram. I'm going to be 57 in January, and I have been called back in the past.
Yes.
There is no history of breast cancer on my mother's side, but there is on my father's side. So the question is, should I do that, and is possibly, is it more harm than good to me? And, of course, I'm going to be worrying about it.
Yes.
I'm thinking I have something.
The worry is something that we actually need to take more seriously as a medical community, by the way. I frequently mention worry, and they say, oh, don't worry. I'm worried about worry is crazy. I would encourage you to continue working with your doctors. What you're getting sounds to me like good medicine. And what the example that you give is one of the reasons why I'm a little more cautious in my advocacy of mammography than many other people. I don't like these cute slogans that mammography saves lives. It does save lives, but it's a little more complicated than that because many people go through what you're going through. Especially for women age 40, there's statistics to show that if you take 1,000 women age 40 and start giving them mammography every year until they're age 49 for 10 years, you're going to have 650 callbacks for an abnormal mammogram. Now, that's not 650 of the 1,000 will be called back. There's some poor woman who's going to get called back every year. There's 650 callbacks, and that's a lot of worry and anxiety. And keep in mind, most of those women will never be diagnosed with breast cancer. But you at 57, you're at an age where we have definite evidence, and all expert bodies agree that we can lower your chances of dying of breast cancer by between 20 and 30% if you just stick with it.
Why are there so many callbacks?
The callbacks are because of that dense breast tissue. Younger women have much denser breast tissue, and it's harder for the radiologist to see the cancer in contrast with the breast. The simple example is a slight over-exaggeration, but think of the old black and white TV where you had a contrast button. You turn it all the way to the left, and it's white screen. You turn it all the way to the right, and it's a black screen. Well, the young breast is a white background, and you're looking for a white tumor on a white background. And aging turns that contrast button until you have a 75-year-old, you're looking for a white tumor on a black background. The 40s and 50s are all shades of gray.
I see. And speaking of older women, Genevieve said, you mentioned the advantages, disadvantages of mammograms up to age 74. What about people over 74? There are a lot of women over 74, including me.
Yeah. Well, we at the American Cancer Society recommend that women who have a greater than 10-year life expectancy get mammography on an annual basis. Other organizations only recommend it up to age 74, 75. It is true that if you look at population level, the life expectancy of most 75-year-old women in the United States is 10 years, but you do run into 80-year-old women who are in incredibly good shape, who have perhaps a 20 or 25-year life expectancy. We at the ACS would say those women still should be getting their screening. Other organizations would say stop.
We're taking phone calls for Dr. Otis Webb-Brawley, Chief Medical Officer and Executive Vice President of the American Cancer Society. There have been different recommendations for screening for prostate cancer, for mammograms, for colon cancer, for cervical cancer, and we're trying to sort all of this out. He has a piece, which you may want to look at if you're specifically interested in prostate cancer, on CNN.com, titled, this is today actually, Prostate Cancer Screening May Do More Harm Than Good. He's also author of a book, which is yet to be published, but will soon, How We Do Harm, scheduled for publication by St. Martin's Press. More phone calls momentarily. 800-486-8655 is our number. The email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program, Lori Winters, will be joining us. She's the director of exhibitions at Milwaukee Art Museum. Rhonda and Chrissy and I had a chance to see their latest exhibit. Lori took us through last week, and it is just gorgeous. It's Impressionism, Masterworks on Paper, and Lori really knows her Impressionists as well. So she will be with us to talk about this partnership. It's the third partnership they've had with the Albertina in Vienna, and it looks at how these artists chose to emphasize drawing. And it's just beautiful. So she will be, as the art museum is, she will be with us, our number two, to talk about Impressionism. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Gay is next in Madison. Hi, Gay.
Yeah, hi. I am interested in this because I started having mammographies because I have lumpy breasts when I was in my 30s, and I understand that the machines then were not nearly as well shielded or focused as they are now, so I was probably getting a worse mammogram. And then I followed the usual advice and had them every year in my 40s, not all during my 30s, but starting in my 40s, in my 50s, and then in the middle of my 50s, I decided that's too much radiation. I was having a lot of radiation on other parts of my body. I did not want it, and so I started refusing them every other year, and it turns out that maybe I was right about that. None of them were abnormal. I think I got called back once, and it appears now that that's going to be the recommendation. I'm wondering if they're going to do the same thing with colonoscopy. Now, I understand that if they find any polyps on colonoscopy, they give you a different number than if they don't find polyps, but do you think that might be, I'm only asking because I have a condition that might make it a little bit more dangerous to even have the colonoscopy.
I understand. In terms of mammography, the American Cancer Society still recommends that women get annual mammography starting at age 40 and extending on until there's less than a 10-year life expectancy. So we would recommend annual still. The Preventive Services Task Force, which I have tremendous respect for, says every 1 to 2 years for women over the age of 50. Talking about colon cancer, keep in mind that the data to show that stool blood testing, which could lead to a colonoscopy, saves lives, is actually stronger than the data that shows that colonoscopy itself as a screening tool saves lives. It's not to badmouth colonoscopy. I recommend it to patients all the time. But you might think about stool blood testing. There are some stool tests that are available and FDA approved looking for DNA products that might indicate cancer that you can also think about. And then there's virtual colonoscopy, which if you have problems getting a colonoscopy, most insurances will pay for in that category. Virtual colonoscopy is done with a CT scan, and it's an X-ray. Now, that's unfortunately more radiation, and that's the reason why I mentioned it as the last alternative for you, since it sounds like you're averse to getting some radiation, which many of us should be, actually.
Thanks, Gay, very much for the call. Email from Pete. Doctor, you've talked about the harm caused by prostate screening, and you talked about the harm of spiral CT lung cancer screening. Neither of these screening methods is particularly risky. Screening per se isn't the problem. The problem is the high frequency of improper diagnosis and treatment based on screening results that lack adequate resolution or discrimination. Unlike some other screening tests, the actual screening methods for prostate and lung cancer are very safe. So what's going on here, the email person says, is that screening to include subsequent diagnostic procedures and treatment practices confuses the test itself with the medical profession's interpretation of and reaction to the test. The problem is as much the doctor as it is the test.
I understand what he's saying. I disagree a little bit. Once you do the test, you have to react on the findings. It is difficult to read a mammogram. It is difficult to read a spiral CT, especially when you're trying to distinguish between a benign process and a malignant process. The folks who actually were harmed by getting those bronchoscopies and biopsies in the spiral CT lung study, those CT scans were actually read by a number of physicians before they actually got those interventions. So it's not that the doctor is at fault, it's that our technologies are not good at discerning these things. And that's why in epidemiology we actually have such thing as sensitivity and specificity.
We go next to Dennis in Racine. Hi, Dennis.
Hi.
Hi.
Kathleen, I'm not sure that Dr. Brawley adequately answered your question when you asked, how do you know you have prostate cancer without the without being tested? Without the test, you may find out you have prostate cancer with a routine digital rectal exam. By that time, it's often too late. The tumor is there. It's probably extracapsular. I really think that the PSA test is valuable, because then if you want the needle biopsy, you can make the decision with the Gleason score. There are 1 out of 6 men will get prostate cancer, and a significant number of them will die from prostate cancer. So I think this is. This is important, and I don't think that it should be abolished.
Well, let's talk about the actual science. Let's be scientific for a second. There have now been 5 total prospective randomized studies looking at the question of, does screening save lives? Now, unfortunately, they were all started after we began massive screening in the United States. And massive screening in the United States has been sponsored by hospitals, by doctor groups. We even have a diaper manufacturer, an adult diaper manufacturer, who's been sponsoring prostate screening. There's lots of money to be made in this business of screening. We started it before the studies began. The 5 studies that have been done, 4 of the 5 fail to show that screening saves lives. The one that actually does show that screening saves lives has significant biases associated with it that would slant it toward a finding that screening saves lives. And that study found, yes, screening saves lives, but it doesn't save very many lives. Okay, that's the science. We got 5 studies, 4 fail to show it saves lives, and 1 shows it saves very few lives. The other part is, all 5 studies show a substantial number of men who are diagnosed and treated were diagnosed and treated needlessly, meaning that they were never going to die from their cancer to begin with.
So how did we, this doesn't make a lot of sense. How did we have massive screening take place and get a lot of people to the point they are now where they think that they still need screening before all the studies have been done to show that it, whether or not it would be effective? It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense, but it did happen. We have all grown up, literally since we were on our mother's knee, being told the way to deal with cancer is to find it early and cut it out. And that was actually probably very appropriate for certain cancers. Even today, it's appropriate for colon cancer. But as we've learned how to find cancer at earlier and earlier stages or earlier and earlier sizes, and we realize that we're dealing with that 160-year-old definition of cancer, we're starting to realize there's some cancers that don't need to be cured. Unfortunately, the test was widely available, and it is appropriately used for the workup and diagnosis of a man suspected of being having prostate cancer. That's what it's FDA approved for. The FDA has never approved it for screening because the FDA requires proof that screening saves lives before it will approve it. And unfortunately, we all just got very carried away. And getting back to an earlier caller, we spend more money on prostate cancer screening and treatment in the United States than we spend on research for all cancers in the United States.
Oh my.
Some of that money that we've been wasting on prostate cancer screening and treatment could have easily gone toward studies to figure out the cancers that need to be treated, and I do believe there's some that need to be treated and may be treated successfully, and the cancers that need to be ignored or watched.
Let's go to Josie in Sheboygan. Hi, Josie.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering, I had a hysterectomy in 1985, and my mother died of cervical cancer at 43 in 1965. And I'm just wondering, after you've had a hysterectomy, I've never had any trouble. I had borderline cancer cells, and I had the hysterectomy, and that was that. I'm just wondering, do I still have to have pap smears, which I haven't had for years?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. When you have a hysterectomy for benign reasons, a hysterectomy without cancer, and you did not have cancer, you had a pre-neoplasia, but you didn't have cancer as I understand it. People who have had a hysterectomy for benign reasons such as that really don't need pap smears. Now, there's still an advantage to going and seeing a gynecologist on a somewhat regular basis, but you don't need pap smears. Your cervix has been removed.
Thanks very much for the call. I wanted to ask you about where we are in the medical community. When you wrote today that you were convinced most advocates of screening and aggressive treatment are motivated by a genuine desire to benefit men in reference to the prostate screening, unfortunately, you say they are uninformed or unwilling to believe the reality that early detection and aggressive treatment of cancer is not always the best thing. So we got a problem with communication here.
Yeah, well, part of it is, you know, doctors really did not learn screening and epidemiology in medical school until about 1990 was when it started being put into the curriculum. You're also starting to see a group of doctors who have master's degrees in public health and have perhaps a little bit broader outlook on the subject. And so you're seeing more and more doctors who are getting a little bit more rigorous as they apply science and evidence to this, which is why all of a sudden you're hearing about questions about the advocacy of screening. Prior to that, all doctors were just taught find it early and cut it out, which is actually clearly wrong now. We do have a huge problem that there's a large number of doctors who don't understand. By the way, I frequently go to doctor meetings and they talk about increases in survival with screening, whereas when I teach my medical students and my graduate students in epidemiology, they all know that the measure of whether screening saves lives is whether or not mortality is reduced. In essence, if someone's arguing survival statistics, that's actually like trying to get directions from someone who measures distance in gallons instead of yards.
Hmm.
You know, so you've got doctors who very easily tell an expert, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Let's go to Karen in Waukesha. Hi, Karen.
Hello. I was diagnosed with a 5-centimeter, I think, complex ovarian cyst. The doctor said that I could wait 6 weeks and see if it changed, or that he would do surgery and go in and take out the ovary and then, of course, check for cancer. And while he's in there, he recommended to take out the other ovary. I'm not too keen on doing that, but I was wondering what your opinion is. And also, I spoke to a girlfriend who said she had what was diagnosed as a 5-centimeter cyst as well, which she didn't say was complex. But she insisted on having an MRI, and they found out that it wasn't even a cyst, and it wasn't even on the ovary, and it was a fibroid. So it's a bit puzzling. So I'm just wondering what you recommend.
Well, both stories that you told me, in my mind, represent good medicine, and you know these sorts of things do happen that way. I would encourage you to see another doctor and get a second opinion. By the way, complex versus non-complex is very important when you're talking about cysts. Many of these cysts, over a period of several weeks, will just go down and there's going to be nothing there. But you also run the risk that there is an ovarian cancer lurking there. And so it's a combination of how much risk you are willing to take or how comfortable you feel. But I always say get a second opinion. Get those ultrasounds reviewed by someone else. Perhaps you do need other imaging. It's always worthwhile to get at least a second opinion.
And we have about 40 seconds left. What are the guidelines now, doctor?
The guidelines are cervical cancer screening every 3 years, starting when one's 18. Some women who have some abnormality still need to get it every year. Mammography every year, starting at age 40, realizing there are some disadvantages to mammography, but we believe that it overall saves lives. Some type of colon cancer screening, be it colonoscopy, stool, blood testing, or other things, starting at age 50 and doing it, the colonoscopy, if it's normal, can be every 10 years. The stool blood testing has to be every year. And then for prostate screening, realize there is a legitimate controversy. Even the American Urological Association says it is not known if the benefits outweigh the harms, and then you need to make a decision.
Dr. Brawley, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks. Dr. Otis Webb Brawley, Chief Medical Officer and Executive Vice President of the American Cancer Society. He's a professor of hematology, oncology, medicine, and epidemiology at Emory University. He's a member of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection and Control Advisory Committee, and he has many other accomplishments on his resume. We thank him for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease for producing this hour, and thanks everybody for your many phone calls. We continue conversation in just a moment.